Hello, everyone. Mark O'Donnell here with Operations Excellence. Welcome to episode number 8 of the Operations Excellence podcast. Today, I am very pleased that we have Mr. Mark Roberts from Staff Leasing. He is the co-founder and executive vice president of Staff Leasing, which you co-founded back in
1989. It's hard to believe 36 years.
I like to think of the 80s as my lost decade, but
well, I don't remember much of it either. But that was after that. So
welcome, Mark. So good. Thanks. So glad to have you here.
Glad to be here.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about maybe that time and what led up to you deciding to start a company?
I've been in sales and in business or around new businesses and other businesses for all of my life, basically. I'd worked at an ad agency with my brother, then went to work at WTVH for 8 years.
Which, for those who might not know, is a local TV station.
That's back when, in the heyday, when it was Dallas and 60 Minutes that was on there, and, you know, MASH and, you know, all of the great shows that were on. But it's, the media industry has changed so much. The pie has just been chopped up now, where before it was 3, 5, 9, and 68 was just getting started. And, but it's amazing to see how now with cable and all of the other TV stations that advertising pie has just been split up so much more that you see the consolidation that's taken place amongst the different stations and things like that. But anyway, so I'd worked at WTVH, then went back into the ad agency business. And my father had actually started Staff Leasing down in Florida. And after seeing their growth and we were handling their advertising, decided they started in 84. So we started in 89 up here, and they were our back room for a couple of years. And then we took over everything up here in 89 and started with a desk with a phone with call waiting and an electric typewriter with one line of memory. And now we've got a room full of computers. And, you know, so it's really expanded quite a bit. And basically what we are is what's referred to as a PEO, a professional employer organization. So we are an offsite human resource department. The name Staff Leasing kind of makes you think that we're a temp service, which we're not. We go in and actually assist the companies under a co-employment structure that we take care of the payroll, the human resource, the workers' comp management. And then by grouping all of our businesses together, that gives us the buying power for the employee benefits, which have got a Fortune 500 benefit package with 5 health plans, 2 dental, life, vision, EAP, all of the benefits like long-term disability, short-term disability, credit union. You know, I mean, it just goes on and on. And we take care of all the administration on that and end up by grouping them together, saving our clients a considerable amount of money and effort in putting all this stuff together.
Right. So you're able to create that value by taking their employees and basically putting them in the pool with a whole bunch of other companies. So now you've got this buying power. Yep.
And each one of the clients can structure and set up what they want to do as far as the contributions towards the benefits. Some pay 100%, some pay 100, some pay none.
Right.
So it's all available, and at least they've got that available to them now.
Yeah.
That at very good rates considered. And the administration aspect. I mean, if you look at when we started, the amount of human resource laws and structures and things that had to be going on, the labor laws were like this, you know, just a few. And now it's just expanded so much that trying to keep track of that. And one of the main things we do is keep our clients in compliance.
Yeah, which is a big deal, as you said, and the laws keep changing.
Yeah, they certainly do. So
do you find that a majority of your client base today is small to mid-sized companies, or do you have a mix?
We definitely have a mix. I mean, we've got going from, you know, clients with 2 employees up to over 300.
Okay.
And each one of them has the same situation. They have employees. And, you know, they've got to take care of managing all of that stuff.
Right.
And it just really streamlines it for them quite a bit.
So. And I would bet, and I know because you actually are looking at doing business with one of my clients. I mean, and you and I had some conversation about some of the numbers, and I won't go into it, but I was amazed at the amount of savings when it came to the benefits. Yep. And the benefits were actually, I think, a little bit better
yeah,
right, than what they currently had. But also, because of their size, and they're smaller, they're around 50-ish people, the fact that you're really going to have somebody able to now manage kind of that whole HR piece for them.
Yeah, it's funny because you call our office and it's not a recording.
Right.
It's not push this button for it. It's,
right.
You got a live person that answers, directs you to where you need to go.
Right.
And the clients love the fact of that. And a lot of them have my cell number and our HR people, all of their cell numbers as well. So
it's almost like you become an extension of their company.
Without a doubt. Yeah. Absolutely. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
And, you know, being in sales for forever, I mean, you learn so much about the different businesses and dealing with them. And people get into business because they're really good at something.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not good at the HR end of it. They're
yeah.
not good at shopping for the benefits.
Right.
They know how to make a widget or fix a computer.
Right.
You know?
Or, right.
As you know, I mean, with your business and what you do, you're going in and training them and helping them, you know, as far as how to expand their expertise. And that's very similar to what we're able to do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We're basically bringing different sets of expertise to help those businesses.
Absolutely.
One of the things you touched on, and I'm just thinking about a conversation I had right before I came to the studio today to do the podcast today. It was with a young entrepreneur, and he is got the classic entrepreneurial brain. Brilliant young man, but kind of all over the place at times. And I think I'm going to end up helping him out doing some one-on-one coaching,
awesome. Right?
Which, you know, I think is going to help him kind of sort through and filter through and maybe get a little bit more focus and practice some discipline and,
sure.
and kind of be better at executing some of those great ideas.
Yeah.
Because he literally could be a very successful serial entrepreneur. Right.
Yeah.
He's got that kind of mind.
As long as it's not a serial killer.
Yeah. No. We don't want that. No, thank you. But if you could, this is why I'm bringing that up. I'm thinking about that individual and understanding also from my own standpoint, how difficult it is starting a business. I mean, you went from the world of working for somebody else, like I did, knowing what your paycheck was going to be every week or whatever. And all of a sudden you kind of step off the cliff and there's no real net there. And here we go. Talk about something, because you talked about how, hey, when we started, we had one desk, we had one phone with one line, and we got this old computer that had, you know, one line of memory. And now, like, you didn't go from here to here overnight. There is no such thing.
It's been a process.
Talk about some of the early days.
There were so many things that went on early on.
Yeah.
You know, that getting the medical benefits structured and set up and making sure that it was what they needed and what was desired. And, you know, then you've got the changes that took place with workers' comp and, you know, all of trying to manage that whole end of things. But it's getting to know the clients and finding out their needs. And we've really expanded the services when it comes to HR. When we first started, it was payroll comp benefits. HR was personnel, I think, back then.
Right, so, right.
But, you know, it's amazing when you think about how much the HR end of it and how that has really helped our business and understanding that and being involved and doing the employee handbooks, which back then people didn't care about. Now handbooks are so important to make sure that you've got your butt covered when you are a business owner. And a lot of the people started, they don't understand that a workers' comp claim, as an example, that severity as well as frequency can end up creating your experience mod to go up.
Yep.
Hypothetically, if you're doing a contractor and you've got a $10 rate for contracting, building, construction, carpentry. So a $10 rate, and if you've got really good experience and not a lot of claims, that $10 rate per $100 of payroll may only be $8. So you got a 20% discount. Now picture that you have a couple of accidents and things, and all of a sudden it goes from the $10 rate with a 25% mod, you're paying $12.50. Competing with a guy that's paying $8 versus the $12.50, you've got a lot of more expense that's going on there. So trying to control those claims and realizing that, you know, a lot of times if you got just somebody that cuts their hand and they need stitches, pay for that out of pocket, and but have it prepared so that if something did happen worse, that you'd be able to turn that in as a claim. Because it's the frequency as well that can end up affecting that mod.
Right.
The other thing is unemployment. You know, it's a brand new business starts at a little over 4%, somewhere in that range. If you're seasonal, like golf courses,
right,
paving companies, some of them, they end up, can get as high as at over 9%, where you can go the other end and not have any claims, a doctor's office, an attorney that doesn't have any turnover, may end up with a 1.5 or 2% rate.
Mm-hmm.
That difference, it's amazing how controlling your cost and knowing that, understanding it, having somebody that's overseeing that, looking at that, can really help you control the cost. And that's part of the learning curve,
right,
of somebody starting a business.
Right.
I know how to fix that car, but I don't know that shit about fixing,
right,
my French, sorry.
It's okay. We don't stand on formality here.
All righty. Well, we'll leave that one out. But, you know, so that it's amazing when that happens.
But that I'm glad to hear you say that, because what you touched on initially there is getting to know your clients and their needs, right? I mean, it sounds to me like you see yourself in your business the same way I try to see myself in my business, and the way I try to position it when I connect with potential clients is I don't want them to see me as a vendor.
Yeah.
I want them to see me as a partner.
Absolutely.
Right?
And a consultant. I mean, you're there to help their business grow.
Right.
The way that I look at things, too, in dealing with these clients, if we can take them, which I refer to a lot, taking them to the next level.
Right.
And with their business, they've done really well at getting it established, being able to do this, being able to take care of this part of it.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, there's all this other stuff that starts coming their way.
Right.
That they would end up going to shop for this benefit, manage the workers' comp, try and get a handbook in place, somebody else doing the payroll. So they got all these different areas all over the place that now they got a single source,
yep,
right there that we're able to put the whole thing together for them.
And I'm sure it can be very different from company to company. Because about, you know, understanding their needs. So what I'm hearing you say is, I would bet you're a pretty good listener and pretty good at teasing out in those conversations, what are the real pain points?
What? Oh, sorry.
Drum roll, yeah, please. You know, nicely, you know, well played. Well played.
No, that's so true. I mean, you really need to learn and understand. And it's funny because a lot of the people that when they get into business and start their businesses,
yeah,
you know, they may have a friend, a relative, a family member that's working with them, and they don't think about a handbook. They're friends, they're family. And all of a sudden they hire somebody else, and then they get somebody else. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, what am I going to do for vacation?
Right.
What am I going to do for sick time, and the labor law now that you've got to be able to offer 5 sick days per year for an employee if you've got over a certain, there's all these different aspects that you could be out of compliance and not even know it.
Right. And not even obviously intentionally, just because, yeah, you didn't know what you didn't know.
These small businesses that are trying to compete with the larger companies when it comes to the benefit package, you know, well, I'd like to put a 401k plan in place, but I'm not quite sure how to. And that's the other thing. I mean, the 401k can set up with employee contribution only, but now it's available. Or you can do the, you know, safe harbor match and all of that other that goes along with it.
So right,
there's a lot of different aspects, but, you know, learning to, as I mean, a lot of the sales training and stuff that I went through at a young age has really helped me understand and deal with the businesses, mm-hmm, and listen to them and programs like what you do. And it's amazing how that can steer you and bring you, you know, like one of the things that I've instilled in my kids all along, and any of these little kids that you end up meeting, when you shake hands, firm handshake, let them know you're there. It's the first impression. You got to let them know.
Can never remake a first impression. Exactly.
PMA.
Yep.
Positive mental attitude.
Yep.
I learned that young, and that's something that I talk to my kids, and they still talk about that. And I hear them saying it to the people that they're overseeing and managing. So it's amazing. And the, you know, the different techniques in sales, but it's being real.
Yeah.
It's understanding, it's listening, and it's delivering what you say you're going to deliver.
Yeah. All of those. I'm really glad you said that, because it is about relationships.
Totally.
What you're ultimately trying, I mean, because you know this as well as I do, right? Nobody's going to buy from you until they buy you.
Yeah.
Right. So I have to step in there and be genuine. and hopefully make a connection on a human level with this person. And hopefully soon and quickly get them to understand that, look, I'm here to help you. And I'm not just saying that. Like I don't succeed if I can't help you.
Yeah, I can't tell you the number of potential clients that I've met with. And after sitting and listening to them and what they're doing, saying to them, you know what, right now, this is not the right time for you.
Right.
You need to wait.
Right.
But when you're ready, I'm going to be here.
Absolutely. And,
but in the meantime, I'm here. If something comes up that you have a question or help in any way that I can do that, I'm here to help you.
Yeah. And I've done the same thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you're better. And they're going to refer you to somebody else or so. Probably 90% of my business, you know, we've got a whole sales team, but of my personal end of it that I put together is all off referrals.
Sure.
No, just after being in for 36, almost 37 years, to think back, I was 34 when I started this. And I'm like, you meet 34-year-olds now, and it's like, all right.
Was I that young once?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you look at the education that takes place that
– yeah.
You know, they aren't learning real life out there in colleges anymore. They aren't, I don't think they teach that. And the experience that you get from being there and doing it and meeting with people and talking with people is just so, so different.
Oh, invaluable.
Than it is.
Yeah.
Sitting behind a desk and having I've never been a book learner.
Yeah.
Never have. So never will.
But you're a people person.
Yeah.
And that's why you've been so highly successful.
By listening and doing and being around and understanding it.
Right.
And I mean, I don't have a formal college degree, but because of the industry that I'm in and what I've done, I've gone back and in the boot camp at SU, I've taught class there at Oswego, at Lemoyne, at high schools, you know, that I go back and at OCC that I've gone back and actually taught classes.
That's great. You're giving back, though, right? You're giving back to the next generations. If I could, I want to revisit something that you touched on because I think it's really important to, based on conversations I have on a daily basis with companies. So you add this value both cost-wise to the companies for what they're paying for benefits, but also to the employees, depending on how they make that split. Right. So there's a cost benefit to everybody involved, which is certainly a big part of the sell.
100%.
Right. But the other thing that you touched on, especially for the smaller mid-sized companies, because of the way you pool all those employees under staff leasing, you're able to offer much better benefits, much more valuable benefits than what that individual company would be able to offer on their own.
Sure. Let alone the amount of work and stuff that would take place doing that. We refer to it as a Fortune 500 benefit package.
So right.
When you've got a smaller business that's competing with, you know, what could be going on at Micron or what airline, with all of the different larger companies.
Right.
And when all of a sudden they've got a benefit package comparable to that, you know, to these larger corporations, it makes a big difference on attracting and retaining people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think more and more you're finding that people are getting away from the large corporate companies and enjoying working and playing, I guess, too, more with the smaller businesses because it's more personal. It's more intimate. It's amazing how much more that brings to the, and a lot of your clients are the smaller businesses.
Yeah. Yeah. Similar. I mean, I've got some bigger ones that are, you know, 500 people, 400 million in revenue, but The sweet spot is a lot smaller, right? For the most part. But you touched on that attracting and retaining quality talent, right? And certainly people want and expect to have a certain level of benefits, right? But the other thing you're touching on when you said, well, they want to sometimes work for maybe the smaller company and play and work. I'm finding that the generations behind us, because I'm at the tail end of the baby. We're both baby boomers, right? But the generation, okay, all right. You got a couple years on me. Still hit the ball pretty well, so still got a little pop in that swing for your golf game. The younger generations, I think they figured out something sooner in life than we did. Certainly than I did. I was in my 50s before I really started to realize that quality of life was a really important thing.
Yeah.
Right. Like you, right? I was brought up that you work your tail off, you put your head down, you do, and that's how you get ahead.
Yeah.
right? And, you know, you don't demand or, you know, I got to have this, I got to have that. And I think the younger generation, and maybe because of whatever dynamics, I think certainly the pandemic probably played into this too, they're looking at it saying, you know what, quality of life is really important right now.
Yeah.
Even if I'm in my 30s and I'm going to work someplace that provides me the ability to have a quality of life
and the flexibility.
And the flexibility,
yeah.
Right. And I think that goes a long way towards being able to attract and retain the talent along with a really solid benefits package.
And it comes right down to the aura of the company.
Yeah.
If that's how you want to put
culture. I mean, absolutely. Right. It's the culture. You could really say culture.
Doubt. Yeah. I think culture is a perfect word to use for that. And that starts at the top.
Absolutely.
And if the people and if the business owners are willing to take care of their people and understand and look at, you know, it's so funny because I've had when we first started, it was like, well, I don't want a handbook. Well, why not? Well, I mean, that just makes it too structured. It's like
I don't want to put it in writing.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. You know, it's well. I don't, and, you know, moving to you, I'm going to lose control. No, actually, you're going to end up with better control because now things are in writing, it's in place, they understand it, you deliver it. They also have another place that they can go to if they're having challenges.
Right.
Instead of them going to the owner or the business person that's there and saying, this claim isn't being paid. All right, well, that's some personal information that they may not want out.
Right.
They call our office, they talk to our benefits people, they do the research, they can help them. So, I mean, there's so many different aspects when it comes to, as I said before, taking things to the next level, which is really what we do.
Which really goes directly to the quality of the employee's experience,
yep.
Right? When you know, and I have a problem. I mean, how many times have we, all of us, picked up the phone to call a bank or some other institution and get extremely frustrated after 20 minutes when I haven't talked to a human being yet, right? I'm still on
it's
the line.
It's funny because, as I said, when you call our office, the live person answers, and I was talk with a client and I won't talk about the company that they were dealing with that I think it's another damn penny, something like AD, something like that. I don't know, but I can't say the name of it, but they were trying to switch from them over to us and trying to get some reports. And I walked in, I'm sitting there and she goes, I'm on hold right now. And she's got on speakerphone with the music playing, waiting for somebody to answer. I'm there for 10 minutes and nobody picks up and she's still waiting and waiting and waiting. Then finally somebody picked up, she hits the button, picks up and hung up on him. And she was like, oh my God,
oh, no.
I just waited 20 minutes for that call. And so it's like, that's where the live person at the other end that my partner, Tom Boel, and I have said, it's always going to be a live person.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that goes right to understanding the importance of customer service. Oh. And it's a lost art today. I do believe that.
Yeah.
I think people are coming back to that though, because the modern customer is so inundated with automation that people have come back to totally appreciating, you know, when you have a live person, that not only a live person, but you already talked about how your people, they're talking to the right people. They're talking to people that whatever their problem or issue is, they're technically tuned in and know how to handle it.
It's, and we've done it for all the different clients that we deal with. And
right.
Every one of them has the same thing in common. They have employees.
Right. Right.
You know, that's the one thing that they do have.
They have people.
They have employees.
Yeah.
They all have to do payroll. Can they do strictly a payroll service? Absolutely. Can they have their accountant do it? Yes. Can they have QuickBooks do it? Yes. Do they want to do that? Are we a little bit more expensive than a straight payroll service? Yes. But with everything that you get and taking things to the next level and relinquishing that pressure, taking it away from the people that are there, and allowing them to focus on the growth of the business.
Right.
Our clients have just grown so much more by taking this off and allowing them to focus on the growth.
Well, you're freeing up probably more than one person within the business to do other things.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
let alone the time it takes to do a research on a benefit claim, or what do I do with my workers' comp, or I need to update my handbook, or there's a new labor law out. What is the new tax law? Oh, that's changed. Well, all of that stuff that goes on are all things that we are on top of.
Sure.
So,
what have you seen as the biggest obstacle generally you face with potential clients that you might not land?
Understanding.
Okay.
Yeah.
You want to talk to that a little bit?
It's understanding exactly what we're doing and how we're doing it. And looking at the fact that we may be a little bit more expensive in some cases, but the savings on the benefits sometimes can offset that. But it's just a matter of them realizing that we are becoming part of the team.
Right.
That is taking the pressure off from a lot of the people there that they can focus on other areas. And it's some business owners are going around like with the blinders on.
Sure.
And think, I've got it under control. I know what I'm doing. I like my accountant. My wife's doing the payroll. I don't want to, you know. So, I mean, those are some of the different obstacles that we run into. But it's funny how there's clients that 10 years ago I may have met with, and all of a sudden the phone rings. I think we're ready, you know?
Yeah, they've changed their
mind. So they realize, yeah. They start seeing and realizing that they're trying to compete. So.
Yeah.
But when you look at, you know, COVID and how that changed businesses too.
Sure.
That just people wanting to work from home and just getting all that back together. So it's you got a lot more people that are wanting to come into the office. You got a lot of people that want to work from home.
Yeah. Yeah, it's changed the dynamics quite a bit. I mean,
do you see a lot of that?
Yeah. Some of the work from home stuff was happening before the pandemic, right? Because the technology was there. But I think the pandemic, and this is just this part's my opinion, I think the pandemic just expedited a trend that was underway. Yeah. I think we were going to see more of that, but it would have been slower. And then the pandemic hit. And, you know, I literally was on a golf course in Las Vegas when my boss called me and said, are you watching this? I had to remind him I was on vacation. And he's like, oh, I forgot. Oh, the governor of New York is shutting New York down. I said, what are you talking about? Right. But yeah. And it so literally, crazy. Yeah, it was, yeah. I left Las Vegas on a Monday morning. That next day, that Tuesday, they closed Las Vegas.
Wow.
Like that's never happened. Yeah. Right. That hasn't happened since. Hopefully it never happens again. But
yeah,
I think, you know, you've got this different dynamic now where some people expect to be able to work from home at least part of the time. And you've got other people, and I think this is interesting because what I'm seeing and hearing is a lot of the younger people who started in the workforce and never really got to build relationships much because they were only around for a year or two before COVID.
Yeah.
Now a lot of them are like, well, I want to go back to the office.
Sure.
Right? That they don't feel that sense of community and the whole social aspect. And let's face it, I've worked for most of my adult life in companies where it was project-based work, which is a team sport, right? And it was much easier and much more productive to have an engineer go stop at the office of a project manager and have a 10-minute conversation to solve a problem than to try and schedule time for a MS Teams call because they're all booked up because they're literally on the computer and on the phone all day long. So, and they call them and they can't reach them. And, you know, days go by, they can't solve this problem that if they were in the office would have been solved a week ago.
Yeah.
You know,
I'll tell you some of the good things that did come out of COVID was Zoom.
Yeah.
You know, being
I'm a fan. I use it all the time. The
technology and it allows a lot of our clients that we deal with may have a corporate office here, but all of a sudden they got an employee in California.
Right.
They got an employee in Washington. They got, you know, so
opens the field.
You know, we've got clients that we're probably in, I would say about 30 different states that we do business in. And the thing with that too, when you look at these businesses, not realizing each state has different labor laws.
Yeah.
Each state has different unemployment laws.
Sure.
So being able to understand
and other regulatory laws
that go along with that.
Yeah.
So it's pretty amazing when you think about how we are able to help the companies expand and not be afraid of going in that direction.
Yeah.
You have certain states like New Hampshire and Vermont that are not friendly to PEOs.
Right. Right.
But so you avoid those.
Right. Right. So. Yeah. But technology is, and I think this is what I'm seeing is the companies that are tuned into the people side of it and understand that, but are also leveraging technology intelligently.
Sure.
Are the ones that are doing it well. My biggest client is based in Southern California and has offices in California, Arizona, Nevada, Idaho, Utah. I know out of their 450, 500 people, I probably have met and dealt with half of them.
Yeah.
That's only due to technology that that's been able to happen.
Arizona, you golf.
Well, we're working out a little late fall trip right now.
If you need someone to carry your golf bag, let me know. I'll go to Arizona.
You come with me.
I love golfing in Arizona. It's beautiful there.
Arizona is beautiful. California has some beautiful courses.
I've never golfed in California.
No.
Although Pebble Beach, you know, would be
I've seen Pebble. My wife and I did the 17-mile drive on the Monterey Peninsula, and she's not a golfer, but it is some of the most beautiful real estate you'll ever see. Yeah.
My wife actually went out there. Her son was in the Air Force out there and was stationed out there, so she had gone out there to see him. And it was interesting because she came back. She goes, "Oh, I went to Pebble Beach." I said, "Oh, my God." She goes, "I got you something. It was the only thing I could afford." I go, "Really?" She goes, "Yeah." She goes, "Here's a golf ball."
Yeah,
so Pebble Beach isn't cheap.
It isn't cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah, different grasses in California, so it's a little bit different golf. But they've got that, I forget the style of grass it is, but it's very difficult chipping out of the rough, I will tell you that.
It's similar to Florida down there, too.
Yeah, yeah.
At least Florida, you get more roll, right?
Well, you do too in California. A lot of those courses pretty dry, depending on whereabouts in California.
But I feel bad for Tommy Fleetwood after this past week.
Oh, yeah. We could do a whole session on that.
Yeah, we could
do a whole session on that.
But we won't.
No. He's got enough money for sports psychologists and other people.
It's funny because somebody said, "Oh my God, I feel so bad for him." I said, "Well, he only won $1.3 million today." So
yeah, he's got a large check and he's doing okay. I'm sure his ego can take it. He'll get over it. He'll win eventually.
Yeah, he definitely will.
So besides our golf game, which we could talk about for another hour.
There you go.
Where does staff leasing go from here? What's the future?
As I said, I'm 70 years old. I enjoy doing what I'm doing. I can't see it ending soon. Or my partner's younger than I am, and we've got a sales manager now that's overseeing the sales team, and we've got our business manager has been with us for 32 years.
Wow,
hard to believe. Other people have been with us over 20. So we've got longevity when it comes to our staff that understands things and have grown with us and keep adding things. So, but
have you seen much transition within your workforce where some of the baby boomers have decided to retire or start retiring and hiring some younger people? Or not a lot?
Not a lot.
Okay.
Not a lot.
It's common.
I think people, I'm sure it is, but I think that what's happening though is that with the flexibility going on and people working more from home and doing things, that you're finding people are working longer.
Right.
It's like myself. I have no idea. All right. What are you going to do when you retire?
I don't know. I know you play a lot of golf now, so I don't know how much more you could play.
A lot, but I try and get out there.
So, right.
But yeah. So what type of training stuff do you actually end up doing with these companies?
Well,
is it sales? Is it management?
I do sales. Mostly I looked, so this is what I look at really.
Let's talk a little bit about you.
Sure. Well, you want to turn the mic on me? You can interview me.
That's my job.
I'm not uncomfortable with that. That's totally fine. Really I'm listening for when I'm trying to get the top spinning with a potential client and teasing out what are their pain points, what are they struggling with. I'm really listening for a couple of things. Number one, are there things they're trying to achieve that they're not able to, right? Are they not getting where they want to be, right? And then I start trying to tease out, okay, what are the obstacles? What's holding you back? And in that piece, I'm really looking for, is it people, process, or strategy? And if it's one of those three things, it's likely I can help them. So on the people side, I do a lot of development work, right? Whether it's leadership development, team building, we do a sales development program, which, the sales process, the buying process, right? All the stuff I'm sure that you went through many moons ago. But it's a great program. Also do some process work. I mean, my background's in industrial engineering and I've done process work off and on for most of my professional career. Everything from balancing assembly lines with and without automation right down to, office work, right? And how do you optimize processes for office work and internal with ERP systems? If you would have asked me when I started my business, I would have said I would have done more of that just because of my background. I for some reason, don't do a ton of the process work. I actually have leaned heavily into the development part. And the other piece is...
When you say development, what do you mean?
So leadership development is a big piece of it, right? And you know, one of the things that people kind of go, is when it's exposed to them that people are not born leaders, right? Right. Now, some people are born with certain attributes that might help them become a leader, but anybody can become a leader. And you see that whenever there's a crisis someplace in the world, think back to 9/11 or any other major crisis that you've seen in our lifetimes, which there's been many, there's always stories of the regular Joe or Jane that steps up and is a hero in the moment that really was just an everyday person.
Sure.
But they rose to the occasion. Right. So the point is anybody can be a leader. And the next question is, are you ready and willing to accept the responsibility and put the work in to develop that capability? Because what happens in many companies happened to me. I went on a Friday from being a young engineer. That following Monday, I was an engineering manager.
Wow.
And what did that company do? Well, they gave me a nice little raise and a new title and all that good stuff. But they basically said, here's the HR policies. Good luck.
Yeah.
That's not development.
Yeah.
Right. True. And that is what has happened even today in today's world. Amazingly, most organizations take the really good doers, the workers, and say, hey, they're promotable. Oh, we got an opening. Let's promote them. Well, that's great. Let's promote from within. But are they ready? Because being a doer and being a worker is way different than being the leader.
Absolutely.
And it's a whole different set of skill sets.
Yeah, it's so funny that you're talking about that too, because one of the things that sticks in my mind that I've said when I've done any of these other classes and stuff, talking to different people, is mm-hmm. that you're going to learn more from a bad boss than you will from a good boss.
Sure.
Because the bad boss is going to teach you all the crap that you should
not don't do this. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, these are my accounts. Remember that. You don't have any accounts. I know you brought them on, but they're my account. That attitude is just amazing how that can stifle somebody's performance.
That's great. I didn't even set you up as my straight man today. And you just teed it up for me.
Right? There you go.
You mentioned the word attitude. So when you talk about development and speaking specifically about leadership development, when you expose people to that, or you know, they think about that, they would think, sure, there's going to be skills and knowledge that I'm going to have to develop and learn. True.
Yeah.
But the secret key or the secret, you know, part of that sauce is attitude, right? Having the right attitudes. And oh, by the way, being a really good worker, you might be very successful with certain attitudes here that if you carry those same attitudes into being a leader are not going to help you much and are going to be counterproductive, right? So having the right attitudes and understanding, you know, how you are responsible for those attitudes, you got to leave your ego at the door. Absolutely. Right? I mean, most people, here's a great example of humbling. And this was because I had some great mentors and coaches. I was VP, the first VP job I was promoted to, VP of operations. And I'm walking the plant. And then, you know, after having a conversation with my mentor the day before, and I'm realizing as I'm walking through this plant, which was pretty large, everybody, they're paying attention. But the next thought that dawned on me, that has nothing to do with Mark O'Donnell, the person. That's because it says VP of operations after my title. They're paying attention to the position.
Yeah.
Right. It's got nothing to do with me. Right. But now you also, with that comes the responsibility that when you're in a high profile position in a leadership role, everybody's paying attention to you all the time.
Or the owner of the company.
Which is the highest profile role,
yeah,
right?
So absolutely.
So what you say and what you do and how you say it and how you do it speaks volumes more than anything I could ever say to that person.
You know, it's funny that fits right in with the attitude and things where the companies that I find are really successful have the owners and the managers that if they ask you to do something, they're willing to do it.
Yeah.
Or if you can't get to it, they'll do it for you. It's, you know, that type that it's like, you're not expected to, I'm above you. I'm not, you know, that's so important. That's really.
Well, one of the big words. And if you asked anybody that I've taken through leadership development, whether it was individually or in a group, they probably got sick of hearing the word trust.
Oh God. Yeah.
Right. Because you know this very well. We were talking about this even during the podcast today, but previous to the podcast, well, before we started today, all business is based on relationships. It's all about relationships. And guess what? So is life.
Yeah.
Right. Well, if you want to form really good, healthy relationships, they need to be relationships based on trust.
And honesty.
You don't earn trust without honesty. Absolutely. And transparency. Yep. And being real and not being a fraud. And, oh, by the way, doing what you say and saying what you do, right? Being a person of your word and treating people fairly. And, oh, by the way, don't do it because I told you so, but do it because it's the right thing to do, yep. Right? And, oh, by the way, creating environments where people are not delegated just tasks, they're delegated responsibilities. Like, okay, I want you to take charge of quality. I'm not going to say you have to do it this way because that's the way we've always done it. You're responsible that we have a quality product or service. Go figure it out. If you come up with a better way and it works.
And we're open to listening.
Absolutely. You know? Right? Yep. Now I've empowered the creativity. You know, when you have organizations that can do that, think about the power of having 50 or 100 or 500 people that are empowered like that. That makes them successful.
Team. As I was saying earlier, that I work so much off referrals and things like that, just because of the trust and the camaraderie and the dealing with people that they feel comfortable referring me because they know that they're going to get honesty, they're going to get the direct delivery. And it's nice to see the salespeople that we've got working with us now doing the same thing. You know, a fairly new salesperson is on with us that has been with us for a few months has already put on like 10 or 12 clients.
That's awesome.
Which that's more than some of them that were with us for 2 years, put on for the whole 2 years.
Right.
We ended up saying, okay, you know what? This just is not going to quite work out. As much as you try and manage him and things like that, it's taking him to the next level and having them comfortable and out there doing it where they're just not quite really should be in sales.
Right.
It should be more in service.
Right.
And so, and you can't take a service person and promote them thinking they're going to end up doing that. So,
well, you touch on something that I think a lot of companies give lip service to, but many companies don't do very well, which is performance management.
Yeah.
When you say performance management to many companies, what's the first thing you think they think of?
I want to raise.
Well, yeah, that might be the employee's answer, but you know, the management might, and employee also would go to, oh, my annual review.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if that's the only time you're having a performance management conversation, then you ain't doing it right. Yeah. Right. Because that annual review should be nothing more than a summarization of the conversation you've been having throughout the year.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. It's just the thing that we have always done in the past too with the salespeople as well. It's like, okay, here's your performance review. I want you to fill this out. I want you to rank yourself as far as how you've done with these different areas. And that's all of our clients online. I mean, because of all the information we've got on there,
sure,
they have the availability to go online and pull up performance reviews and things along that. And the job descriptions should fit right into that so that they can, well, that's, I'm telling you, your own business.
Well, performance management really, you know, done well starts before the first day somebody comes to work, right? Because first off, you should be preparing and they should walk into a workplace where they've got whatever their station or office is, they walk in and they feel welcomed.
Yep.
Meaning I've got a computer that works. I've got my login credentials. You know, I've got a phone if that's part of the deal that works. I've got all the basic tools to do my job. I'm welcomed by my team and by my supervisor, introduced around the company. By the way, you have a plan to onboard and train me. It lays out both the introduction and the expectations, right, from day one. And that, you know, training is not a one-time deal.
No, you know, it goes on forever.
Absolutely. But that initial, you know, those initial days and weeks and those initial handful of months are so important because you're either setting somebody up for success or failure.
Yeah. Right? My daughter just changed jobs. She's out in Denver working remote.
Yeah.
And she's out in Denver and she went from one company to another. And the company that she was with, the management style and the input and the was one way. This new company, she's like, I can't believe how good I feel about where I am and what's going on and the way I'm being treated and communicated. And it's amazing the whole aura and atmosphere and that ends up coming through
the culture that we talked about before. And culture gets thrown around a lot, but culture, simply put, is, you could describe it this way, I think is best, my opinion, is how people feel working in and with that organization.
Sure.
Right. And, you know, you can all other descriptors, but that's a great description. Here's, I'm assuming your daughter's probably a highly talented individual and she worked for a similar company, but she goes from one company to the other. And maybe the job's not a ton different, but the organization is.
Promotion. But
okay. Yeah. But still maybe the same industry.
Yeah. Oh, right? It is very much. Yeah. Marketing.
So but very different feel, how it felt. Totally. Right.
Totally. She had a manager that didn't listen.
Yeah.
And was chauvinistic with things. And being a woman, she didn't react that very well. And it wasn't, it's amazing the difference in management styles and people and the success of businesses that take place.
Yeah. Or lack thereof. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because there is no single indicator of what's going to make somebody a successful leader.
Sure.
However, one of the stronger indicators, 75%, and this is from scientific data, 75% of successful leaders have highly developed EQ, emotional intelligence. And, you know, people might think, oh, you know, that's kind of a warm and fuzzy word, but it's a really important thing because emotional intelligence is really just made up of being able to understand and control my own emotions, but also being able to understand. And here's that word that some people want to politicize, which I don't understand why, but having empathy, is way different than having sympathy. Empathy just means I not only understand what you feel, I make the effort to understand why you feel that way. And it doesn't mean I agree.
Yeah.
But if I can connect with people at that level, that's a real deep human connection, right? That's how you build relationships. And the last two pieces of EQ is being able to help others work from highly emotional states to what's called emotional clarity, right? And that just means diffusing that. Doesn't mean the emotion goes away, but it's getting back to the point where I can now make decisions and take actions based on intellect rather than raw emotion. So I'm not just reacting on emotion. You know, you think and of those things emotion, I just described. How can you be a good manager and leader if you don't have those abilities? You
know, with the emotional reaction that some people have, flying off the handle, screaming at people in front of other people, my God.
Yeah.
You know, that's right back to the thing in the beginning that I was saying, back a ways, as far as you learn more from a bad boss than a good boss.
I've learned something from all of everybody I ever worked for, and you're right. Some of the best lessons were working for people that weren't very good leaders.
It's amazing.
Because you remember them very well.
Yeah, exactly.
They burned into your conscious.
Yeah, it's right. I'm not doing that.
Yeah, don't ever do that. Yeah, no, that didn't feel good.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah, but that's, and that's why I think you and I connected. Besides being avid golfers and all that, I think there's a very big similarity in your approach to doing business and in my approach. And also, I think in how we try to bring value, to our clients. So,
honesty, integrity.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And, you know, it's funny you said it too. I'll be the first one to tell a potential client, I'm not the right guy. And if there's something they need, and if I know somebody else that can help them with that problem, I'm happy to help them.
I've referred people to a local payroll service several times, and just so.
I've referred a few people where they had financial issues and, maybe we're looking at refinancing a business or looking at a merger or acquisition. It's like, it's not something that's my specialty, but let me give you a few phone numbers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's the connections and people. And
sure.
The ones that you get referrals from.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you'd never know. At least I always say, if I haven't made a new client, at least maybe I made a new friend.
Exactly.
And you never can have too many of those. So. Mark, I want to thank you for your time today. It's been a pleasure.
I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Enjoyed our conversation.
Me too. Me too. All right. We'll have you back again sometime.
All right. Thanks, my friend.
That's all for this month's episode. Thank you very much. Have a great day.